Okay. Greetings and welcome to the Peace Alliance Monthly Action Call for the month of April 2020. My name is Dan Kahn. I'm the National Field Coordinator for the Peace Alliance, and it's a pleasure to have you all with us. Thank you for coming together in this time when virtual community is sometimes the strongest and most present community we have for many of us. It's really a pleasure and a privilege that you've chosen to reach out with us and connect in common purpose and solidarity. So really warm welcome, and thank you for spending part of your evening with us. I'm gonna go over the agenda for tonight. In a few minutes, I'm gonna introduce our special guest, Kit Miller, who's gonna speak for a little while. Kit is the executive director of the Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. And after Kit speaks, then we'll have a chance for question and answer and discussion for about 15 minutes. Then we're going to talk a little bit more about the monthly action that we're asking folks to take. Everyone who was registered for the call at least an hour ago should have received an email from me with a link to an action sheet. So I'll ask you sometime in the next 20 or 25 minutes, if you can, to check your email and take a look for that. It's not actually a link, it's a URL because Zoom does not allow us the technology to share a link there, but you'll have to copy it and paste it into your browser to access the action sheet. So if that's convenient, please take a look at the action sheet and have it available sometime in the next half hour. Then we have a few announcements. We'll have an update from a representative of the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. I believe that's gonna be Nancy Merritt. And then we'll welcome some field shares, which is any news that you folks would like to share from your peacebuilding world. And that could be in terms of advocacy or organizing, and particularly this month, because many of us are sheltering in place or in some form of quarantine, I'll invite you to share anything that has been working to increase the peace in your world, help you to feel peaceful, connected, joyful under these crazy, unique circumstances. So that'll be during the last 15 minutes or so of the call. So that's the plan. And I really appreciate, again, all of you joining us. I think many of you are familiar with Kit Miller. I suspect that a lot of folks who are on this call are here specifically because they're familiar with Kit and or with the NK Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. Kit Miller has been the director of the MK Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence in Rochester, New York since 2009. And prior to that, she was the director slash celebrator of Bay Area Nonviolent Communication in Oakland, California. Kit has been learning about nonviolence and organizing on its behalf for the past 26 years. She draws on Gandhian and Kingian nonviolence, as well as nonviolent communication and permaculture for direction and daily practice. And she sees herself as an educator-practitioner hybrid. In addition to using the Institute itself as a learning laboratory for principled nonviolence, Kit teaches and works on community projects related to restorative justice, sustainability, and anti-racism in Rochester and elsewhere. Kit has taught hundreds of groups worldwide and has spoken at the United Nations several times in recent years about nonviolence with youth in the 21st century. It's a great pleasure to have her with us. Let me find her on my screen. There you are. Thank you. And unmute her. Welcome, warm welcome, and thank you for being with us, Kit.
Hi, everybody. It's so nice to see you. Hello, Linda Alvarez. It's been a little while since I've laid eyes on you. And Anger, so nice to see you. Hi, Judy. Hi, everybody. And I love, Lisa, your background. I have background envy looking at that. Everyone, Lisa, will you wave at everyone so they can catch your background? Look at that background. So I wanted to spend a few minutes tonight with you, jumping on to talk about a wonderful collaboration with the Peace Alliance and the DOP in relation to our Nonviolence Now campaign, which I spoke about. I was looking in my records. I actually last hung out in this call last January in 2019, and was reporting at that time on sort of like the phase one of our Nonviolence Now project, which was a year-long project that took place, that was launched at the United Nations on Gandhi's birthday in October 2018. It was a result of a surprise win of a $250,000 global media prize from the Newman's Own Foundation. And at that point, we decided, instead of using that prize to kind of like promote the Gandhi Institute, we decided let's promote the idea of nonviolence itself. The organization in Atlanta that was administering the prize loved the fact that we decided to use the prize to advance a principle in the world, rather than kind of to advance in our particular organization. And so they not only doubled the prize, but also gave us a free full page ad in Newsweek magazine in the December 7, 2018 issue. We had a chance to, even though unfortunately we didn't have as part of the prize any sort of background analytics, we were able to estimate touching somewhere around 3 million people. And part of the idea for this is that I feel particularly that we've abandoned the internet for young people in too many ways as like really promoting the least common denominator of humanity, you know, like so much violence, pornography, just so much stuff. I mean, we've all probably seen some of the data around how like YouTube algorithms inadvertently engaged a lot of young people in white supremacy, for instance. There was a big piece in the New York Times again about it. So like, I felt really passionate about, like, we need to bring good stuff onto the web. And honestly, even if it feels like lighting a match in a windstorm, we've got to do it and see what we can do. And it's been a kind of remarkable match that kept burning and burning. Last summer, we had ads on buses in Rochester, New York, going around, these huge ads. And if anyone goes on the nonviolencenow.org website, you can see, and we're about to actually do another bus campaign, just finishing the collateral on that today. We're going to be doing billboards. So it's going to be a big nonviolence campaign in our community, recognizing the damage to the social ecology caused by COVID, on top of the damage that already existed there as a result of poverty and racism in our community. I'm here tonight especially to celebrate the second phase of Nonviolence Now, which was launched with support from a Silicon Valley-based organization. And that was a national campaign that we did this year in partnership with the Peace Alliance. We were promoting the Blueprint for Peace campaign, as well as getting people, young people, to sign up for something called Nonviolence News. Have any of you been, you put your hands up in the air if any of you are reading Nonviolence News, which is something that Revere Sun started putting together last year with our Nonviolence Now campaign. I highly recommend it. The media is such an important space for us to reclaim as a space for a news that's good in the world. And Nonviolence News is something that was started with Revere as one of our team on the Nonviolence Now project. We started gathering and collecting stories of nonviolence to share through Nonviolence Now. And we began to realize that there were actually dozens of stories every week. So we wanted to start changing the narrative that nonviolence is this thing that it's only happened back in the day or only happens now and then. And we found so many stories that we started creating this weekly online journal about that. This last phase of Nonviolence Now in the national petition campaign that we just did, we highlighted 25 cities in the United States that, at least according to one study, were struggling some of the worst of violence. And we were able to do a petition campaign. We were able to reach out to and connect with 88,000 young people in the United States as a result of that, who became subscribers to Nonviolence News, and who also were invited to click on and support Blueprint for Peace. So we're continuing to work with Public Foundation in Atlanta. We're continuing to try to find out how to use social media and web-based technology for interrupting this regularly scheduled programming of violence online. So it's this, I have no business doing any of this, by the way. I'm completely ignorant about technology, and we have basically like hardly any money even for the work that we're doing in Rochester. But this thing keeps like finding us, basically. So There's a lot of information about this on our website. So that it's such a brief amount of time, I don't want to spend a lot of time, but I welcome any information that anybody wants to know more about it. It's been quite a remarkable journey. And what's next is past our local campaign, I don't know, but I'd like us to continue nationally, because we're finding that young people are very hungry for this based on the response rates. We got such good response rates that we were able to negotiate with the advertisers to bring the prices, the rates down, because young people were interested in this offer of nonviolence online. So isn't that good news? So I'll stop, and I'm just trying to keep an eye on the time, be respectful. Dan, I think if there was other stuff you wanted me to talk about, just boss me around. Well, yeah, it's getting late on this end of the continent.
No problem. Yeah. I'm sure I'll have a couple of questions for discussion, but I'll let other folks have a chance first. If you have a question, you can raise your hand either electronically or physically. If you can see where to raise your hand on your screen, you can do that, or you can just wave your hand. If you're on your phone, you can press *9, and I'll see that as a hand raised. Since I'm not seeing one just yet, I'll go ahead and throw a question in there. I really am excited about the combination in your background and in your work at the Institute between nonviolent communication, the skill set and the practice, and nonviolent political action. So I would love it if you could talk a little bit about where you've seen those things meld, where do you see those things come together, opportunities for using empathy politically, as it were, or anything you want to say about that, I would love to hear.
Yeah. Well, I want to say that I don't think of nonviolent communication primarily as an empathy process at all, because I'm afraid sometimes if it's used that way, it just helps us to become better at being conflict avoidant. I don't want to become more skilled at avoiding conflicts. I want to become more skilled at being able to speak my truth. And I'm afraid I did use my nonviolent communication practice like that for a while, and I'm resolved not to do that anymore. So we use nonviolent communication at the Gandhi Institute to actually make us better at walking towards conflicts faster, for giving each other courageous feedback, for bringing on anti-racism and principles deep right into the center of our work, and being able to talk to one another about those tough moments that we inevitably have, because if you're white in this country, you're racist and you're in recovery. I am myself a racist in recovery. I'm working really hard to recover. So all institutions in the United States, by virtue of being in this country, are also in that recovery space. So we use our nonviolent communication skills on a very diverse team to have these brutal conversations, enjoy one another's company, make sure that we know that relationships matter, that one another matters. And so that's really like it enables the work that we do. I'm proud that I have very low turnover on my team. I have remarkable, bright human beings who are not well paid. And they hang around. It's like my favorite form of feedback. Did that answer your question a little bit?
That answered it wonderfully. I'm still craving a little bit more. I wonder if you'd be willing to give any examples, if any examples come to mind of what some of that courageous feedback or another one of those walking towards conflict using NVC might look like.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we have a feedback form process that we've created, and I'm happy to share this with anyone that's interested. If you want to send me an email, it's a form that my team created because we had some turnover a couple of years ago, and a lot of it had some pretty intense racial overtones. And I realized that even with a high trust culture that we had created as a group, that there was still so much conditioning that all of us brought that was fearful around surfacing issues. And there were always things underneath going on around rank and privilege and race. So we needed more support, and we needed a structure of support to help us do that. So our team of people that I was not on, which is a blessing, created a very robust feedback process that we use, that we where we, in interpersonal and institutional format, we break down a whole bunch of attributes, and then we talk about like how do we show up in that way, what needs are the observations, and then the needs that are met by doing that. And it's our protocol is that we all are exchanging feedback with all of us every year. Our whole team of 10 does that. And then if people work closely together, the frequency is 4 to 8 weeks. And when we do it, you have to say some, you have to give observations about what's working and also what's not working. And we find that the effect seems to last about 3 months from these courageous sort of feedback sessions. So that's been a very structural piece that's been, that's really come out of the last couple of years. And especially, you know, we have, as we've added more of the detail around like excavating our own racism, developing a practice of cultural humility that people can actually see and notice in terms of how we show up in meetings, how we facilitate. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. So let me make space for other folks. If you have questions and want to jump in, at this point, I think anybody can unmute themselves. I think I don't need to be like calling on people. So if you want to chime in with a question, I think we can do that harmoniously enough. I see Christy's got her hand up. Go ahead, Christy.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Kit, for all you're doing. And I you're really tapping into like some questions that I have around how we diversify the movements we're attempting to keep moving, you know. And I really appreciate what you're saying about privilege. It just feels like a lot of gatherings don't have all the faces and voices they ought to have. And so I just didn't know if you had any further wisdom about how we can proactively build bridges with some of our communities that are more marginalized, whether that be economically or culturally or even religiously. So any wisdom you might have around that on practical steps that we can be taking.
I like the standing up for racial justice model, where they're very deliberately recognizing themselves as like essentially like a white ally group, and to reach out to groups that are primarily composed of people of color and say, how can we partner? Like the Movement for Black Lives, I think, would be a great group to try to think about partnering with as one example. Like how do we as a white, primarily white organization try to be in relationship to and in fellowship with Black and brown led organizations? So that would be something that I think would be a really interesting thing to pursue and learn by doing that. Watch who talks first, watch who talks most. I think standing up for racial justice has some good modeling and learning around that, especially for us. And I, for sure, in peace building and environmental field, I get this question a lot, because people are like, how come we're always these white organizations, and there's just been this effort for years to try to diversify, and we're not getting there. And so I think, you know, for me, it's always been to go and show up and say, how can I help? You know, how can we volunteer? How can we lift your message? How can we, promote your work? And over time build trust. And that's been a good thing for me with indigenous people in our region, as well as with brown and black organizations, and not asking for credit, just doing it, and not ask for credit, not ask to be seen, just do it, because it's a form of reparations. Every question everyone asks me, I want to talk about for an hour.
That's awesome. We've got a little bit of time. We're still pretty good on time. I saw a different hand up, but it went down. So Lawrence Cirillo, you're up.
Yeah, I had a question. Could you expand a little more on what you're doing with regard to restorative justice?
Yeah, we've been advocates for restorative justice for the last 10 years since I started my work at the Institute. done a lot of public education in the region originally. One of my favorite projects that we did about 8 or 9 years ago is we created a newspaper from the future. It looked like a real newspaper, and we handed it out. It had the Hall of Restorative Justice as like the big front page. And you know what? I'm actually doing a restorative justice project with the civil courts now. And I think Linda's talked about that with me and this judge I'm working with now. I'm doing all this work now in the justice system, and I swear it was from like planting the seeds in this newspaper 8 or 9 years ago. In the years since then, we've been very involved with, you have to get this work structurally in place. It's not good enough to have it just be something that people take on, because I've seen people come and people go, and then all the advances and even the grant money that was put into building programs goes. So it's got to be structural, which is one of the reasons why I love the Blueprint for Peace, because it's calling for structural change. One of my big projects right now, in addition to working with the civil courts on creating a restorative justice civil matter or civil case structure. And the first one was just done, by the way. It was a wrongful death case against the state that took place about 8 weeks ago, and it went so well. Everybody was thrilled, and the judge brought food for everybody. I mean, amazing. But I've also been working with the University of Rochester, and I'm actually doing like 3 different cases now in the medical center and in the university. The university is the largest employer in the region, so we're trying to get them now to use restorative in their HR functioning, and not just, it's so easy in schools and educational systems where they want the students to do it. It's like the pat on the head thing. Oh yes, those kids really need to learn how to do that, but all of a sudden it's like the adults want to start calling for it. They want to start calling for it in their HR function and other things, and so it's been a great, I love restorative justice as a structural implementation of nonviolent principles.
Okay, very good. I was curious if you were doing it in the schools, and it sounds like you are. I think we need to start in the elementary schools and then build it from there.
We have 2 schools where we work in K-8 buildings, both with close to 100% poverty rates and among the families, tragically. One of them was on New York State's persistently dangerous list. And we just made a beautiful video about that work. It's on the Ghani Institute YouTube. We just put it up a few days ago. It's beautiful. Please look at it. It'll be, when you're having a bad day sometime, take a look at it. It'll cheer you up a lot.
You said that's on the Ghani Institute website?
Yep. It's on our YouTube channel. Yep. Okay. Which is tiny and needs juice, so we're working on that in our COVID days.
Hey, thanks Lawrence for those questions. And as you mentioned, Kit, each one of these things we could spend an hour with you on. I love it. So people are invited to do further research and stay in further communication. I see somebody on the phone has a hand up. It's in the 608 area code. I can go ahead and unmute you, because it's, I think unmuting yourself is *6, but I got you. Welcome.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you, Kit. And thank you to the Peace Alliance for this evening call. Here in Madison, there's a really groundbreaking model by one of the leaders who happens to be Black called Justified Anger. And he created a model with professors from the University of Wisconsin where he runs a 9-week history course. And it's called U.S. Black History for a New Tomorrow. And it changed my life, because that's where I learned our true history. And Kit, I love that you own your racism. I go around doing that too now. And I found that it comes down to relationships. So I went to a panel one evening, and I was really moved by this woman who was doing amazing work. And I just went up and introduced myself and said, "How may I serve and support you?" And she was quite taken aback. So we met for coffee, and I have to be safe if I'm going to be trusted by anyone of color, which means I need to be doing my own work. And so having the courage to do that and reach out to people and make mistakes and trust the relationship was really, really profound. And I'm also doing some family constellation work on the history of how this country was founded, because the energetics are really interesting. My question was, what did you find when you engaged with young people, and what was the demographic? I'll definitely go on your website and check it out, because it sounds really important that we demonstrate another way, and you've been doing that, and you are doing that, and in claiming back the media space is so powerful. So thank you.
So, sorry, tell me, what was your question exactly about how do we connect with young people?
Yeah, and what did you get back from the young people where it was hitting them? What touched them about what you were offering?
You mean in terms of the Nonviolence Now project?
Yeah.
It's a good question, and I'll never have enough data to really know. I think people are hungry for it. I think there's a healthy, hungry part of us that wants to know that the world is a safe place, and that meaning and purpose, which Paul Chappell says are the most, you know, important things that we can have under stress. And Michael Nagler says is actually truly the most addictive substance for humanity. So I think that there's probably curiosity, and there's wanting a different story. And what a great way to rebel against your elders who've told you that violence is the only way to go. You know, let's tap into all that rebellious, that good stuff. But also, people are independent thinkers. You know, they're you know, from the time you're young, now you're on the computer, you're looking stuff up, you're figuring stuff out. I remember my daughter years ago taught herself sign language because she had, you know, deaf customers at the little store where she worked, and she like figured out how to speak ASL from YouTube. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways that people are savvy now to connect and use information. So we, you know, we try to come up with some appealing graphics. I think that helped. The person that does that whole campaign is 23 years old, and so she's just got a good handle on this stuff. She's like there was, it would never work if someone as old as me was doing it. In my opinion, I don't want to be an ageist, but I am a little bit when it comes to social media stuff, I have to admit.
But they know what works. They're on it. They know their level of heart. They know the memes that people are seeing, and they know what touches them.
Yeah, and I think we're learning. We're learning how to, I don't think we know it. I think we're trying to figure it out, and we're really trying to understand how to do a better job. And you know, by big budgets advertising, we've had very little money to play with. And so what's this company down in Atlanta, Public Foundation, they've been very generous to us because they're really intrigued by it. They've never done this kind of work, and they're very intrigued by it. So we're, you know, hopefully we'll get another chunk of change. But I think the thing I want to talk about with you know, is that the Nonviolence Now project continues to be what I would call an experiment in radical collaboration. So, you know, this time we advanced Rivera Sun's Nonviolence News Project. That's her project. It's not the Institute's. We advanced the Blueprint for Peace Project. So for me, like actually doing a lot of work and not doing it to butter my own bread is part of how I want to decolonize my thinking. I want to get capitalism out of this head. You know, there's things about it that have benefited us, but there's been too much harm. We need another system now economically. So Inger's been hearing me rant about that because we've been doing a book group reading Dr. King's last book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community, which feels like it was printed last week. This was a book that came out the last year of King's life. And we're going to do another online book group of this probably in a couple weeks. Inger, what do you think? Pretty good thumbs up on that project, on that book group, right?
I think it has been actually enormously enlightening. For me, it's especially, I have learned so much. And I think I understand my thinking a little bit better. And as Kit says, constantly learning about my own racism too. So it's been a very, very good experience. I highly recommend it.
One last thing I want to say is that I also think that, you know, for us to be able to be good activists, we have to be able to grieve and mourn, because there's so much happening that's just so different from how any of us would want. So we're doing Tuesdays and Thursdays at noon Eastern, we do grief grief and support circles. They're about 75 minutes long. And anyone's welcome. Today we had one. We had some people from Europe with us and people from the States. And it's just a really important time for us as activists to make time to do the grief work. I think that's a really, Dan, back to your question, like how do I kind of maintain myself in a good space in order to be able to have empathy for myself and other people as someone who wants to be an activist. I think for me, you have to be willing to do the grief work. And a lot of us are afraid of it. You know, we don't want to touch that part of ourselves. But, you know, there's no, like Joanna Macy says, there's no way to be only partially numb. I mean, numb is numb. And so we've got to defrost ourselves enough to be able to feel that pain, but also to feel the joy. And then we have more fun doing our work with one another too.
Powerful stuff, Kit. Thank you. Thank you so much. I've taken a lot of notes. So let's shift into looking at the action that we're asking people to take. Does anybody have it in front of them just to get another voice and is willing to read it aloud? It's pretty short. We basically give you a little bit of a research reading request and then ask you to pass it along to educators that might be in your life. Anybody looking at it and willing to read it out loud? Great.
Make time to focus on something good, on some good empowering news. Take a look at these three sources of empowering positive information. Sign up to receive the newsletters and or updates so you will be reminded of what's moving in the positive directions in the world and how we can be part of these changes. www.nonviolencenews.org, www.yesmagazine.org, www.goodnewsnetwork.org. Number two, think about your contacts in various networks and make a list of the educators, whether elementary, middle, high school, or college. Then share the above resources with some or all of those educators to share with their students. Maybe now, more than ever on earth, people need the nourishment of well-grounded hope. Awareness about positive, empowering news is one of the greatest gifts we can give these times.
Thank you, thank you. So if this is calling to you, the invitation is put this on your calendar to do some time in the next day, week, you know, whatever works for you. Spread the word, spread these resources. That's the invitation. Anything you want to add to that, Kit, about this action?
No, it's just great to be with you. Thanks.
It's great to be with you too. I'm really finding nourishment and inspiration to keep learning and keep growing. Kit, if you want to stay with us for the rest of the hour, you are more than welcome to do so. If your time is more scarce or if you need to do some self-care or whatever you need to do and need to depart, huge thanks from me and from all of us at the Peace Alliance and Solidarity. Looking forward to continuing to learn and grow with you.
Me too.
Okay. I have a couple of announcements. Actually, I'm being joined by somebody who can help with the announcement. Folks may be aware that for the last several weeks, there's been a Hope Story Circle on Saturday mornings, sponsored by the Peace Alliance. And that's been presented by Yelena Popovich, who is the council lead on our Peace Alliance Council on the Teaching Peace in Schools cornerstone, as well as Liz Gannon Graydon, who is not only a board member of the Peace Alliance, but also a founder of the organization, What Better Looks Like. And Liz is a longtime activist and peace builder. And we're lucky to have Yelena with us, who can tell us a little bit about that Hope Story Circle, which is taking place again this coming Saturday. So welcome, Yelena.
Oh, thank you, Dan. It was lovely to listen to Kit. Thank you so much for everything you shared and all the questions that came. Yeah, it. We have met four times, and I just so resonated when I read the action. And actually, what we are trying to do is the nourishment of well-grounded hope. That's what the calls are all about, is actually that awareness about positive, empowering stories that are happening for us right now. So the invitation is for storytellers to tell a story. And then the next invitation is a reflection on how we can integrate that story with our experience. And then we break out in small groups and share our stories with each other. So then we come up with a collective story of hope and actions that we want to take. So that's the invitation. And I see many people actually that have participated and are part of this call. So I'm glad to see people join in here and in there. So it was lovely. You're all welcome. It's Saturdays, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific time. Welcome you all.
So if you're on the Peace Alliance email list, you should get an invitation to that. If you are not on that list and want to be, you can send an email to info@peacealliance.org. If you just want to get a hold of the link to access that call, you can email Jelena, that's J-E-L-E-N-A, @peacealliance.org, J-E-L-E-N-A. @peacealliance.org. Another little announcement, our social media maven, Patty Latai. Patty manages our Facebook and our Twitter account, and she's got a little project that's called Peace in Place for folks that are engaged in different kinds of activities around your house, around your yard, that are sort of emblematic of what you're doing in these lockdown times, in these quarantine times. Just snap a picture of yourself or your family doing these activities, throwing a peace sign. So it's a little Peace in Place social media campaign just around solidarity that we're working on, bringing peace into our daily activities however we can. So you can email those photos to Patty at peacealliance.org. So she asked me to give a little pitch. A reminder, next announcement, that this call is being recorded and it will be available as a downloadable podcast on our website on the Peace On page. So that's available. Feel free to download it, share it with friends. There was so much richness in the first half of this call that I know I would like to hear it again and take more detailed notes. And finally, if you enjoy what we're doing and would like to support us financially, you're also invited to do that on our website, peacealliance.org. You can find a place to give a one-time donation or be more of a sustaining contributor with a monthly donation. You're warmly invited to do so. That's all my announcements, our announcements. Next up, I want to welcome Nancy Merritt. If I can find her, she's usually on the phone as well as on the screen. Let me find her 510 area code. Nancy, is that you?
Hello, I didn't phone in this time.
You didn't phone in, you're just on the screen, keeping it simple for me.
It's shocking, I know.
It is shocking. Making changes. Who moved my cheese?
That's sort of my theme. My theme for right now is how we're all constantly adapting.
I like it.
Go ahead.
So I just need to give you a little bit of an introduction before you start going. Nancy, it basically coordinates and in many ways leads the Department of Peacebuilding Committee of the Peace Alliance and has been active in that pursuit for these 15, 16 years, as far as I know, probably longer, and is a wonderful organizer and a beacon to us all. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you. That's very, very nice. I want to thank Kit and you and Yelena and everybody who's been on the call. When the coronavirus started sweeping this country, the U.S. Department of Peacebuilding Group was in the midst of our Season for Nonviolence campaign of contacting members of Congress to gain co-sponsors. And we were in the middle of planning for our traditional Mother's Day Peace Wants a Piece of the Pie visits to local offices of our Congress people, and debating when and how to do advocacy days in Washington, D.C. And all of this got quite upended, and we're having to adapt to different ways, perhaps, of doing all of this stuff. We were also in the middle of our California group was in the middle of trying to get legislation passed for a California Office of Healthy and Safe Communities. So anyway, it's been a challenge. Our world is changing a lot. We're adapting, and COVID has been really personal in a lot of ways, and has touched each of us. And I usually wouldn't go into this, but just wanted to say a few ways it's touched me, and therefore how we're also doing the Department of Peacebuilding campaign. I've been more or less in quarantine since February, and definitely all of March and April. And this was due to various illnesses and being associated with friends who were on the Princess cruise, the first cruise ship that brought COVID back to the U.S., to the Bay Area. I have three friends or loved ones of close friends who passed away. And none of them due to COVID, but two of them had to do this alone without their families being around. And then I have seven members of my family who had COVID and are now recovering. And to me, that's kind of astounding to have that number of people. And then there have been a lot of good things that have happened during this time, lots of birthdays and lots of celebrations. And my husband and I spent the weekend having a Zoom 50th anniversary wedding calls. So that was really awesome. It was exactly when I got married 50 years ago, exactly how I thought I would be spending my 50th wedding anniversary. So anyway, as I was saying, we were celebrating Season for Nonviolence, our group was, and we had honored Dr. King and Gandhi and John Lewis and Eleanor Roosevelt, and passed on a lot of their amazing messages of their lives. And we ended with a something that I came across from Mahatma Gandhi that seems really applicable today. He said, part of what he said is, no matter what is going on, never give up. Develop the heart, be compassionate, work for peace in your heart and in the world, work for peace. So that's what our committee will continue doing. I know that's what all of you will continue doing. We'll find new ways to do it, new ways to celebrate this beloved community, new ways to honor Earth Day and Mother's Day, Peace Wants a Piece of the Pie, and all of our other traditional actions. And we'll be sending out emails about how we're doing that. And our core group is also working on the rewrite for the Department of Peacebuilding bill that will be introduced in January. And I think it'll be a really interesting process doing this with sort of COVID informed eyes, and so we'll see how that goes. But I invite all of you to participate in any of our actions or anything that feels next to your heart for doing peace building. and to check out the Movers and Shakers part of the Department of Peace website for more information on some of what I've just said. And anybody is invited to our Department of Peace building campaign call tomorrow at 5 o'clock California time. So that's what we're up to. And I guess I just really appreciate this beloved community and all the communities out there who are making the best of this situation.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you so much. And for folks that want information about dialing in to that call tomorrow or anything else that Nancy just shared about, she can be reached by way of nancy@peacealliance.org. Pretty straightforward. So as promised, now we'd love to hear from any of you all that would like to share. And it can be about your activism, your organizing efforts underway where you live, events that are coming up, and or if you would like to share some combination, if you like, of what's difficult and or what's working in your personal realm. I was inspired by Kit to open the doors to both. What's hard about this situation, if you'd like to share, and also maybe what's working well for you in nourishing your own peace experience. So again, you all have the power to unmute yourselves. We can sort of go one by one. I see Mr. Andre Sheldon has had a hand up. So why don't you go ahead and lead off?
Yes, hello everyone, namaste. I think that the COVID crisis has created an opportunity for nonviolence to be the most important element that the whole world right now, especially because UN Secretary General Guterres called for a global ceasefire. Mm-hmm. And really what he was saying is, let's promote nonviolence. And so I'd like to ask Kit, what if there's anything that, and yourself, Dan, about the Peace Alliance, is anything being planned with regards to the call for a ceasefire? But in particular, I've been fortunate, I've been working on promoting nonviolence as the goal, not just adhering to nonviolence. And I presented the plan to the Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations 3 weeks ago. And it's based upon that nonviolence can unite all the movements, all the religions, and all the people right now, especially because of COVID. All the people are showing their compassion and wanting to help people. It's a perfect time to promote nonviolence. And I think that the Secretary General gave us the lead. And so all the nonviolent movements, all the peace movements, all the and the climate, all now can combine together, and everyone's been looking for a way to unite. And I think it's nonviolence. So I'd be glad to tell you more about it at some time. For anyone that wants to know about it, the website is Global Strategy of Nonviolence to promote a global movement of nonviolence. And the kicker is, it would be different and special because there's one group that's representing nonviolence the best. I was an acquaintance of Howard Zinn, and he told me that he believes women represent nonviolence best. So the plan that I promoted to the UN was that the first ones to rise up to promote nonviolence, the first ones asked to be the first ones, would be women, and then invite the men. And that's the little tweak, that if women are the first ones, that the men will follow. And so I'm a Code Pink person, and I'm a member of WILF, Women's International League. So I present that to you for your thoughts. please contact me, and I'd love to know what people think. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Who would like to go next? Anybody up for sharing? Go ahead.
I'd like to just follow up because
sure.
I wanted to just comment that recently the Peace Alliance, along with the Global Ministries and GAM, endorsed a UN initiative to support the Finance and Development Forum, which is an important part of financing underdeveloped, challenged countries. There was a push at some point to eliminate funding for that. And so we want to just reiterate and take a stand along with a lot of other organizations that supporting other countries in shared responsibility and global solidarity is very important. So we did do that recently and also have put out tweets about the global ceasefire, the UN ceasefire, which to me was a remarkable, in my lifetime, I never dreamed that actually there would be international organization like the UN actually come out and take a stand for a ceasefire, tragically in the midst of a pandemic as the reason for us to stop killing each other in other ways. But I too agree that I think it's a huge step in kind of the global psychology of what of how we treat each other, which is critical. So I think this virus has been very powerful in having people realign their association and understanding of relationship. We're so much closer, even though we're so much further away. And I loved your Kit, your comment about decolonization. I think this is really an interesting opportunity to be having that happen, because as we have so glaringly learned, borders are nothing. We are all one global community, and you can't stop pandemics. And as we knew, you can't stop war based on only nations. I mean, war goes over borders and into, and it's infectious just as the virus is. So it's kind of an interesting analogy in that sense. The other thing I just wanted to remind people, if they didn't know, to please, we're going to continue to try to push the Blueprint for Peace. So if you haven't signed on to that endorsement statement, it is on our website, and we encourage you to do that. It sends a message to our congresspeople who now, since they're all home, and many of them sequesters may have the time to actually look at these types of initiatives that normally they're so overwhelmed with what's going on the House and the Senate that they don't have the time to do it. But now is, I think, a really powerful time to share, for example, Nancy's work with the Season of Nonviolence and the Blueprint for Peace. And these initiatives that are so kind of under-publicized and under-championed, which are doing really the yeoman share of the really hard work on violence in this country and globally, but particularly in this country. So it's a great opportunity to leverage that as we go out into who knows where we're moving. But I think it's a very tragic time, but also a very inspiring time, at least in my reality, because I am seeing people get it connected in an entirely new way and from a different perspective. So thank you. Thanks everybody for being on this call. It's great to see everybody's faces and here. And Kit, thank you so much for the work you're doing. You're just inspiring, as is Nancy, as probably everybody, I know everybody on this call is doing inspiring work. So thank you.
Thank you, Judy. And for folks that are not familiar, Judy Kimmel is one of our board presidents here at the Peace Alliance as well. I didn't have time to squeeze in an introduction, but thank you, Judy, for all that you do.
Oh,
yeah.
We're all doing it.
Anybody else? We've got another 4 or 5 minutes if folks want to share what's working for you in your day-to-day. It doesn't all have to be, that you're delivering messages to the United Nations, although if you are, we'd love to hear it. But if it's just that you're having a good relationship with your cat these days, let us know about that too.
This is Chris Wood in Madison, Wisconsin. I also am connected with the Human Family Unity Foundation, and I've been reaching out to people of color-owned businesses trying to figure out how to support them and what they need. And when I was doing my first wire, and they asked, well, what is this for? And I said, gift. And the banker said, well, we need to know a little bit more. And I tried to hide the annoyance. I said, look around. People are hurting. He said, oh, okay. And as soon as I hung up, I got the importance of words. So I called him back. I said, Fez, I know what you can write. Gift hyphen creating a new paradigm.
Nice. Lovely. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's so interesting. The very local, very personal things we do, and what are the political, economic, social implications of our choices now. Who else would like to share?
I will.
Great.
My name is Pat. I don't know if you can see me. I just, mm-hmm. I do a lot of work in Israel and Palestine, primarily with Palestinians and Israelis who are trying to help Palestinians. And at this time, there's a big push to try to get nonviolent political prisoners, Israeli prisoners of Palestinians, and U.S. prisoners, nonviolent prisoners in the United States, and prisoners over the age of 50 or 60 or something, out of the close quarters that they are in prisons. So this week in particular, there are a lot of efforts to call members of Congress and ask them to push for the release, particularly of nonviolent offenders, to try to ease up the crowded situation. A lot of these people there for nonviolent offenses, they have not been sentenced to getting COVID. So we're trying to work on that in both those populations.
Wonderful, thank you.
I don't know if there's a place to send a link or not.
You can tell us what the link is, if there's something that people can
find. Well, that's what I was working on right before I called this call, so let me see if I have it. I can, I could send it to you. There's one from Samudun. Let's see who else is doing it. Jewish Voice for Peace is doing it. There are a lot of groups. I don't have the link in front of me.
Jewish Voice for Peace, you said?
Yeah, that's one of the things that they're working on right now.
Okay.
But I can, I don't know if there's a place to put it on your website, but I'm happy to send it.
Okay. I imagine people can find Jewish Voice for Peace, you know, among others.
It's just one of many things that they're doing.
One of many. Okay. All right. Thanks for the good work.
I'd like to make a comment, if I might.
Please.
Hi, my name is Donald Pett, and I direct a nonprofit called the Educational Community. We try to teach Einstein's solution to create world peace. And one of our goals would be to start a network of meetings, telephone conference meetings, likely using Zoom, where we offer our program. Everything is free on the program. And the centerpiece, peace being PEAC, the centerpiece are 10 recordings we've had done by a professional speaker and actor. They're only about 8 or 9 minutes long. They teach happiness, love, and peace. So everything is free. All you have to do is go to the website and sign in. We've received a pretty good donation to try to offer free, probably up to 50 Zoom links to groups that are doing something for world peace. So Barbara Marks Hubbard, many of you know the name Barbara Marks Hubbard. See, she suggests that we need a peace room. And the idea is if we could create a virtual peace room where we have meetings around the world. Remember, two alcoholic men started Alcoholics Anonymous, and now it's a worldwide organization. So it's one of the models of one of the fastest ways to spread and grow rapidly. So that's what we're doing. The website is www.peace.academy. And there's quite a bit of information. And I think what we're very proud of is these 10 recordings that are there on 7+2 formula. So if you go to peace.academy, click on 7+2 formula, all these recordings are available and they're public domain to any nonprofit corporation. So the idea is that anyone, whatever you're doing, that you can use these recordings. We've made arrangements with the speaker who not long ago did the lead role in Fiddler on the Roof, for example. He played the role of Tebbia. So you know he's got a good speaking voice. He's playing that role.
Don, I hate to cut you off, but we're at 1 minute past the top of the hour. Beautiful. I love the Fiddler on the Roof reference. I'm glad we stuck with you long enough to hear that. We can unmute everybody in a minute and join together in a rousing chorus of tradition or something. before we do that, I'm going to share a closing quote and just thank you all again for so much for being with us. Wishing you all the best of health and well-being for you and all those that you care about and that care about you. And the quote that I selected, I'm actually going to paraphrase to take the gender out of it, is from Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said something like, "When it's darkest, people see the stars." Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to unmute everybody in case you want to say some final words to each other, and wish you all a wonderful evening.
Peace and love.
Okay.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Peace. Be safe.